The real reason that you just witnessed, which is that the birds will get more and more excited the more action there is. So if people are taking pictures or whatever with the flash, the birds are going to go crazy, and it makes the presentation less. But I'm more than happy to leave the birds out for a few minutes if people want to go get their Kodak moments with the birds after the presentation. But please don't take any pictures during the presentation. Okay? I don't mind if it's recorded. Yeah, no problem. Do I need a mic? Can you hear me, or is this okay?
A little loud.
Okay, so can I have a mic? Thank you. Okay, I'm going to start high, and then when I get a mic, I'll speak a little lower, and this way hopefully everyone will hear me throughout. So the topic of this presentation, sadly, is not going to be about the turkey for a number of reasons, mainly in close confinement. If I had a number of exotic turkeys here, 2 to 3 minutes into the presentation, people would need to leave, medically speaking. And I'm not talking about COVID. So the turkeys are generally very big, and if you look in the Mishnah Berurah, they smell terribly at certain times in their day. And as a result, I have never had an enjoyable presentation, at least from my end, because I'm closest when I present turkeys. So the Rav was nice enough to allow me to present a bird that we actually have a Mesorah for, so it's a little bit more to say, to talk about chickens. As you probably know, the Torah tells us how to identify mammals and fish, right? You've cut split hooves, fish have scales, locusts, depending on your favorite Rishon, you have physical signs by which you can identify kosher mammals, kosher fish, and kosher locusts. Of course, with birds, the Torah does not give us physical signs. Instead, there are two lists. There's a list in Sefer Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph and Sefer Devarim Perek Yud Aleph. Combine the lists, those 24 birds and their species groups are forbidden, and any bird that's not on that list of forbidden species, the vast majority of the birds in the world, are presumably kosher by process of elimination. The problem is, if you stop and think about it for a minute, here in Muncie there's a tremendous amount of wildlife. How many people in this room, and I'm not asking for a poll, I'm just asking you to think about it, can identify 24 wild birds that fly in your backyard? All the more so if you wanted to identify all the birds in Eretz Yisrael or wherever, to be able to identify 24 forbidden birds so that you can eat them on the Daraisa level really requires a certain amount of expertise. According to all the Rishonim, up until the time of the Gemara, everybody was able to identify, at least there were abundant, who were able to identify the 24 forbidden birds. Sometime after the time of the Gemara, either it was towards the end of the Talmudic period, or it was in the time of the Rishonim, Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, when they lost this ability, the Jewish people were no longer able to identify all the 24 forbidden species. So now, it became difficult. Wow. Doesn't like the mic. My first bird presentation that I ever gave was in Lakewood, in one of the Bate Medrash there. And, I was all nervous and whatever, and there was a black hat, and it was placed on the bird cage, and the bird jumped out of the cage and destroyed the hat. And I felt that this was absolutely the worst possible way to begin a presentation in Lakewood of all places. But nonetheless, the birds are not controlled, so I'm sorry, but that's what I'm saying. Don't take pictures and stuff like that. They just get nervous. Okay. So anyways, if you can't identify the 24 forbidden species, so then by default, you have trouble determining, if you don't know what a bird is, if it's kosher or not. The Gemara already suggested that people only eat birds which they have what's called a Mesorah. But before we get to that, the Mishnah on Chul and Daf Nun Tes discusses physical signs by which the kosher and the non-kosher birds could be differentiated. According to the Bali Tosfos, this Mishnah is actually based on research done by Noach. He's in the Teva, he's a smart guy, he's stuck there for a long time, he did some scientific research, and he discovered that there are signs by which the kosher and the non-kosher birds could be differentiated. Incidentally, this view of the Bali Tosfos is alluded to in the Pasuk, because Noach, aside from the Mabel, he did something else that was never done in the history of humanity, which is he brought a carbon from every single kosher species. So Noach
perhaps, or whoever it was that was the source of the Mishnah, they had a tradition that there were four signs by which the kosher and the non-kosher birds could be differentiated. We're not doing a shechita here, so I'm not going to delve in. We have a shechita and everything, I know. Do you have your challah here? Is it kosher? But there are four physical signs by which the kosher and non-kosher birds could be differentiated. You have kosher birds are not predatory. Generally, they have a zephic, they have an auxiliary pouch at the base of their stomach. They have a korkabon, another auxiliary stomach, which is niklaf biyad, can separate in the hand. And they have an espetir, they have an extra toe. We're not going to delve into that, but the idea is, you probably, if you're familiar with shechita, then everything I'm saying makes sense. And if you're not familiar with shechita, you're probably aware that the verbiage that I use is insufficient to conclusively explain to you how to differentiate between the kosher and the non-kosher birds. In fact, already in the time of the Gemara, they tell stories where communities, either almost or actually, relying on the signs, the Linnea and the Mishnah, ended up eating birds that were not kosher. Adam Sora. A kosher bird should only be eaten if there is a tradition, rabbi to student, that this bird is not one of the 24 birds forbidden in the Torah. Okay. How accepted this was in the time of the Gemara, the time of the Gaonim, is not so clear. What's sure is that in a lot of the Ashkenaz countries, by the time of the Isser v'Heter, it became accepted. And it already was accepted in the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah to various degrees. And the Rama basically said across the board, you could look it up, some pebes, said across the board, we only eat a bird if it has a Mesorah, no exceptions whatsoever. A Mesorah means that I have a tradition that this specific bird is not a forbidden bird. For most of the history that's recorded to us, it would seem that there wasn't drastic changes in the world's wildlife, which meant that maybe somebody went to a new country and there's one or two birds that people were not familiar with, but there wasn't a grand influx of all different kinds of fowl that completely called to question what's kosher and what's not. However, and we'll get to that, in the last 200 years, that has happened.
Come on, I'm trying to talk.
Can't even check this one, right? I mean, what are we going to do? Okay. What? I have my coat for that reason, but we'll give him a second. Okay, anyways, I'll just go louder. We have from the Gemara that chickens were in Israel, and I mean Israel, not necessarily by the Yidden, in the time of the Malchut Ashur. When they exiled the 10 tribes, they brought in the Shomronim, and among the groups of the Shomronim, they built their different Avodah Zarah, and the Tanakh describes that one of the Avodah Zarahs that they built was Nargal, and Nargal is identified, the Gemara, as the Tarnagol, which means that they were...
Is this too distracting? Or
no, it's fine.
Okay. Which means that in the time of the Ashur, there was at least a cult of people in Israel who deified the chicken, which means it was basically known in Israel before the Churban the Bais Rishon. For sure, by the time of the Bavlim, the chicken was relatively known in Israel. And in the time of the Gemara, the chicken was mamish everywhere. And that's not just from the Gemara, where we see the chicken is everywhere, but it's also from the archaeology. It seems that Eretz Yisrael, for whatever reason, had become a center of where people were raising chickens. Sadly, we don't know what chickens they were raising in Israel at the time of the Gemara. But we do know a lot about what kinds of chickens the Romans were raising. For those of you that are into archaeology and stuff, you know that the Romans were very into art, and they have left over a tremendous amount of artwork, some of it which is very detailed. And this artwork, I think, puts it pretty clearly what a classical Roman chicken looked like. Nothing very special. If you were to go to Rome and see a chicken, I have an example here of what I think a Roman chicken would look like, and this is not because of any high-tech study. It's I see the pictures, I see the size, and I found someone who had one, so I got it.
Hang on, let me just figure out where it is.
I'm gonna try this guy.
Give me one second. Thank you.
Okay.
Now this chicken over here, it's really nothing really special. It's probably the opposite of special. It's not a specific breed, but it's a, I would call it a, this is a primitive leghorn, which means that in the Mediterranean area, these were the chickens that were raised. If you look at this chicken, it looks like a Pasha chicken if you're familiar with chickens. I don't think that it has any special characteristics. It's not show quality, definitely not the kind of thing that is being raised today by people who are proud of what they're raising in their backyard.
The eggs we are taking from this?
Yes. Right. I'm sorry, what's your name? So, Rav Silver over here, he pointed out that he asked if we get eggs from this. So I said yes, but that's not 100% true because it's a rooster. But it's a rooster, so we're not getting eggs from this bird. But it's a leghorn, and if it was to produce an egg, the egg would be the white egg that you buy in the supermarket generally. The leghorn comes in all different colors. I got one that's colored because the white ones are usually available really cheap on the market. I didn't want to go because of COVID to a live poultry market, but in general, this is a primitive leghorn, and it also has the colors that you would see if you would look at the Roman artwork. The Romans weren't raising white leghorns, they were raising something that looked like this. My point, oh, I'm sorry, people can't see us. Okay. My point is that this is what a classical regular chicken looks like. Any questions, concerns, or comments? Now, this chicken was regular. Can we just move this? And I have here one of the more interesting chickens.
I have two varieties of that.
No, it's fine. I won't run out of room. I have this planned. No, I appreciate the offer. I might need it, but so far we're good. Okay, if you look at these chickens here, you'll notice that these chickens look very, how should we say, they look probably, if you're not a chicken expert, you haven't seen birds like this before. These chickens over here are extremely halachically significant, and let me explain why. First of all, they are the best, the most meticulously documented breed of chicken that I am aware of, and I think if you do the research, you'll see. These are known as Polish chicken. Now, many of you are thinking, well, they're from Poland because they're called Polish chicken. That is not true. They are from Poland, but that's not why they're called Polish. The nobility of Central Europe, of which Poland was when it existed and other times it didn't exist, that's where they were, raised these. And they raised them not for food, but as pets. However, the Dutch gave it its name, and they called it Polish after Pol, which is head in Dutch. So it's called Polish because of the head. You can see why, the head feathers. But on the other hand, they happen to be from Poland and that area of Central Europe. So draw your own conclusions. The reason why these are halakhically significant was like this. First of all, when the nobility raised these chickens, what they used to do is they used to take very, very detailed artists, you know, they had hired artists to make family portraits, and very often these chickens were included in the family portraits. Some of the people liked these chickens so much, they had portraits drawn dafka of these chickens. And we have extremely detailed, I'm talking photographically accurate artwork from the 1600s depicting these birds, and they look exactly like the birds you're looking at. From the color of the feet to the characteristics of the feathers, these birds have not changed in 400 years. This is what they looked like, this is how they were in the 1600s, this is how they are now. Now, the reason this is interesting is because Chazal were very interested in the 1700s with these birds. The reason they were interested is you see those long feathers, you can't miss it if you're looking at the birds. Please no pictures till after the presentation. The reason why they were interested in these birds is because those long feathers, what those feathers create are fat deposits at the base of the stem of the feather, and those fat deposits create what's known as the cerebral hernia, which in the Lashon of Chazal creates small holes in the skull. As you know from Hilchos Treifas, a skull that's punctured renders the bird a treifa. So there was tremendous debate, not whether or not the bird was kosher. In fact, many of the poskim point out, Dafka, it's a kosher, it's just a chicken. Among the most reputable, the Simul Chadashin, his Sefer Tefillah Shor, he knows it's a regular chicken, but it has long feathers. So there's no Shilam Misora. Chazal agreed that this is just a mutated chicken. But because of the fat deposits, there was a tremendous amount of discussion what you had to do to verify that this bird was kosher. So now, if you look at our three cages here, you have these two birds, which I'm telling you are the exact same species as this bird. They don't look the same. They don't behave the same. Look at them. Everything is practically different, but this is a chicken, this is a chicken. You have a Masora that this is kosher. You can eat this, no question. They're all the same species. Okay? Now, what ended up happening was that 1600s, there was no great explorations, at least that where you had things that were powerful or fast enough to bring exotic birds from all over the world. In the late 1800s, with the Industrial Revolution and stuff like that, people were able to bring birds live from all over the world to Europe. And there was a growth industry in all sorts of wild products. You probably heard, you know, there were people that paid millions of dollars for tulips and stuff like that. And people were paying top dollar for very exotic chickens. If you were a wealthy noble or wealthy landowner in Europe, you probably had somewhere a menagerie somewhere in your family. And you were paying top dollar for the super exotic things that people could bring. And people were, you know, sending their ships all over the world. And when they came back, they would bring whatever exotic stuff they could have. That's a good question. We'll talk about the turkey at the end if we have time, but I want to just finish with the chicken.
You are talking about
late. I'm talking the 1800s, late 1800s, 150, 200 years ago. Much earlier, right. Already the Bach mentions the turkey. So that's 300 years before these guys were... Okay. Now, chickens breed very well. And as you probably know, every culture in the world, every country in the world has chickens, and almost all of them have specific chickens that are indigenous to their areas. And what people began to realize was that there was profit not only in having a chicken that looks different, but also having a chicken that tastes different. This chicken has an excellent level of egg production. And people were raising it for eggs. In fact, in the United States, there was tremendous amount of industrial progress where they had multi-million, in those days that's the equivalent of multi-billion dollar corporations, that were raising chickens for eggs. But at the end of its life cycle, remember, a chicken can live 15 years. But after 2 to 3 years, there's a precipitous drop in the level of egg production. And these companies used to sell the excess chickens after they couldn't lay eggs. They'd sell them for meat. And what people realized is that you could make a little bit more money if your chickens tasted a tiny bit better. So what they did was they started mixing this chicken with something like this. The problem that I have, before I show the guy who was making all the noise, is that this chicken, which is called the Black Cochin, is actually show quality, meaning it's the fancy one, but it's probably not what the average farmer was working with, but this is the ideal of what he should have been working with.
Right, we have the net if he escapes.
This chicken, as you can see, is much bigger than this chicken. You combine these two chickens together, and you get a chicken that tastes great, and if you do it properly, produces a tremendous amount of eggs. And the combined chicken, there were a whole bunch of different kinds that were raised in different parts of the world, and in America, the popular one, hang on, looks something like this.
I'm sorry, this is the Black Cochin.
From India?
Probably. Yeah, it's mentioned in all the Shal Sushubo says, the Cochin China. Hang on 1 second.
What is the Jewish name of the leg?
Okay. Yeah. Now, sorry.
Now, this chicken is not anything special. It is a... It's just a combination of basically if you combine leghorns and you combine the cochin, they got basically these bar chickens. This is not a real bar drop. Definitely not show quality. But I've shown members of this flock to older shaykhim, and until the 70s in America, this was sort of, I'm not going to say exactly because we don't have the exact one, but close enough to representation of what the common meat chicken in America looked like. This chicken produced a tremendous amount of eggs, 240 eggs plus, and it tasted relatively good, much better than the leghorn. I'm sorry? You think it's excellent in flavor. Okay, so I'm sorry, what's your name? Okay, so Shui says that he thinks that bardrucks are super in flavor. I don't know, maybe I'm not doing it right, but I don't think they taste that great. But I hear, they don't taste like regular chicken, I'll give you that. But maybe you give them better food. We can discuss it after the presentation, your secret. Because I find that they taste a little better, but I wouldn't say super delicious. But hang on.
It's a good question. One second, let me just...
The other side of the coin, this chicken, the gray and white chicken, was raised for meat primarily, although it also had extra fantastic egg production. And the other chicken, the brown one, which I just threw in, almost a Rhode Island red. I mixed it with New Hampshire because they do better in my area, but it's a Rhode Island, basically Rhode Island red. And that chicken is raised primarily for eggs, but the meat is better than what you'll get from a leghorn. So these classical chickens, hang on, these classical chickens, these two are what was popular until really the 70s, and they were derived from a mixture of that leghorn and some kind of a cochin, and maybe a few other breeds were thrown into the mix. Okay, I see we have questions, so I'm going to stop for questions, and yes, please, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. Rabbi Silva, yes.
So where is coming the brown one.
Okay, so this is the lineage as we know it. The leghorn, probably, I mean, again, Italy or somewhere near Italy, okay? It was known as Leghorn after the town of Livorno, and Livorno was a port city, so somewhere.
You are saying it's coming even from the Middle East?
Could be, but we know that in the Roman Empire, meaning throughout the areas that they were drawing their pictures, this looks like a classical chicken that you would find in the Roman Empire. We don't have any, I think, articulated artwork from Eretz Yisrael, so I don't know if that's what they had in the time of the Gemara in Israel, but at least in Southern Europe, this was what a chicken looked like. These two chickens were, you know, recently made in the United States by combining, and this is a cochin. The cochin, they think, comes from India, although it might have come from an area a little bit north of India.
That's from cochin.
It could be from cochin itself, but that's a port. So that's probably where they shipped it out of, not necessarily where they were raising it. Okay, and cochin is in the northern part of India.
Are these chickens reproduce, or do they have like mules you have to do?
Ah, that's the key question. So somebody asked that question, and I want to address that issue, which is one of the ways, and this is a very, very much determinant, according to many poskim, which is, let's say the chickens breed together and produce viable offspring. Now the Gemara says, that this is the Mesorah that they have from Rav Yochanan, that you don't have a situation where kosher and non-kosher mammals are able to successfully hybridize. So it would seem that if that applies to birds, then by the fact that two species can breed together, even if the offspring are sterile, that we could assume they're both kosher. But it's not clear from the Gemara, and it's definitely machlokes among the poskim, whether or not that same rule applies to birds. According to the Avnei Nezer, and this is how the OU poskins, if you have two species that produce viable offspring, meaning you combine two kinds of birds, one is a regular chicken, the other one looks like a chicken, it breeds with chickens, then the babies are fertile, so we assume they're all chickens. Now, for those of you that don't breed chickens, that sounds like a pretty easy test. But for those of you that breed chickens, you know the test isn't so easy. I have a small flock of chickens, which I thought were kosher. They're known as Japanese bantams. Very small. And they breed, and only 25% of their eggs end up being viable. And my statistic is not different than what other breeders get as well. So now you want to say that they breed naturally, but is it called breeding naturally if most of the eggs won't survive? And, you know, when I speak to the poskim, people don't know. So if you have, let's say if you breed the, when I have a bunch of these guys, right? 80% of their eggs, 90% of the eggs are going to hatch. So it's pretty clear if this guy breeds with another chicken and 90% of the eggs hatch, we can assume they're the same species. So we don't do kalayim biyad. We don't have a laboratory where we do a biyad. What we do is we have a facility where we have very big aviaries. And in the aviaries, we have all kinds of birds, and we see what they do. I'm sorry. No. Everybody does not accept the Avnei Nezer's Pesach. But the Avnei Nezer's Pesach in and of itself, while it's clear what he's saying, the research is not easily replicated. Meaning, I understand, and if two birds breed together and they have a very high level of fertility among the offspring, but a lot of chicken breeds, because they've been line-bred and they've been so bred together, they don't breed well. So you'll have some of the kinds of chickens you have even less than 25% of the eggs will hatch because there are recessive lethal genes in the breed. So you do the Avnei Nezer's test and you still don't know what to do. Right. The offspring have to be fertile. Right. And one of the big machloksim that happened here in the United States about 10 years ago was there's a duck called the Muscovite duck. And the Muscovite duck breeds with regular kosher ducks, but the offspring, for the most part, are sterile. So the psak of Rav Belsky's, the Chorin Levracha, was it's not considered to be normal breeding if they breed together, but the offspring are sterile.
Was there any shala halacha?
We're gonna get to that. Okay. The Kochin over here, despite his economic and commercial uses, was heavily debated among the poskim. If you look at anybody who wrote a psak about chicken in the 1800s, they either called it the Cochin China, the Cochin, some form of that. This chicken was extremely, extremely controversial. And many people feel, and again, it's still debatable, that some of the greatest of the poskim of the 1800s answered this bird. The Darchei Tshuva points out that this bird was so popular in Europe that in his time, all of the birds shared at least a little bit of the genetics from the Cochin. So if you say that the Cochin is usher, it seems from the Darchei Tshuva that basically you'd have a lot of trouble eating chicken. What's interesting is why we're offering this chicken. Somebody in the back asked them, sorry I didn't ask for his name, so what's your name? Okay, so Rabbi Leichter said, wait a second, what does everyone passing like the Avnei Nezer? So one of the people who probably didn't passing like the Avnei Nezer was Rav Chaim of Sanz. And Rav Chaim of Sanz, he wrote a bunch of tshuvas about chicken. However, his tshuvas, he never identifies the bird by name, and he provides only fleeting characteristics of the chicken. So to say that he was certainly talking about the Cochin, I'm not sure, but it's very possible that he didn't like this chicken. But this chicken breeds with all the other chickens, and unlike the birds I was telling the other chickens, the fertility is excellent. So Rav Belsky Zichron El Vracha Paskind, as OU policy, that we would not certify the Cochin itself, in difference to the Rabbanim who answered it. But other birds that are descended from the Cochin, we do certify. And the reason we certify is because otherwise there's nothing to eat. Meaning there's no chicken. What? Right. So there's a difference between halacha and minhag. Meaning, if there was a tradition not to eat the kochin itself, so we're not going to break that tradition and start eating kochin. But to start doing genetic tests on every chicken to make sure that it has no lineage that's kochin, especially when we know that we'll have no chicken to eat, that we don't have to do. And you have to remember that whatever minhag Yisrael was, everybody, I think in this room, has eaten chicken on Shabbos. And I can assure you that if you've purchased a chicken to eat in Israel, America, I don't know all parts of Europe, but the parts of Europe that have major Jewish communities or had major Jewish communities, they're 100% certain that it's derived at least in part from a kochin. So minhag Yisrael was to eat the descendants, just not to eat the kochin itself.
The Legon has kochin in it.
Hang on, that's an excellent question. I'm sorry, what's your name?
Avram.
So Avram looks at this bird and he says, why doesn't this look like a chicken? So I can't answer that. I can't tell you why some chickens were more controversial than other chickens. But what I can tell you is you have the same information everyone else has. This is a kochin, these are regular chickens. If you think they're the same, you're entitled to your opinion. Rav Chaim of Sanz felt that slight differences in appearance were very problematic, and he was particularly bothered by the fact they had feathers on their feet, the size and the nesting habits of the chicken, and the fact that these chickens generally didn't go to the air. They generally stayed on the ground. And again, if you think it's a pasha chicken, harisha chalavanecha, I don't have to describe it, you can see it. If you need me to move this, you better let me know. I'm sorry? Most chickens, when they roost, they go as high as they can. So if I were to release these chickens at night, they would fly up to the tree. This guy doesn't fly up to the tree, he hangs out on the ground. I'm sorry? Maybe. I'm sorry, I think someone else had a question here that I said I'd get to in a second. Yes, you had a question, right? No. Okay, yeah. So the Darchei Tshuva points out that at least the chickens that were combined with this, everybody was eating. And the Darchei Tshuva was Mestama Ben Bayis. He's not going against Rav Chaim of Sanz. That's for sure. So whatever Rav Chaim of Sanz paskened on the kochin itself, it's very clear that in his community, the people who were eating the birds that were mixed between them. I can't tell you. You can look at the Darchei Tshuva yourself. I don't have any special information. You can see the Darchei Tshuva, Pei Beis, I think it's Lamed Gimel, if not, I'm off by a little bit, and you can see what he writes. Yeah. Hang on. Wait. You're not being 100% accurate here. You're saying 1800s. It depends when in the 1800s. In the year 1800, you're 100% right. There also weren't too many Jews here that were keeping kosher. You move to the end of the 1800s when the Jews started. Your family's been here since that time? By the late 1800s, my family came, I guess your family came, maybe they came on the boat together, but by the late 1800s, that's when you had a strong Jewish community developing in America, and by that time already, there were kochins all over America. All over. By the 1860s, if you want to be precise, the kochin was first brought to England in the 1840s, and by the 1860s, it was the popular chicken. There was an American version of it, which is known as the Brahma, which incidentally, the Darchei Tshuva did not matir, which is interesting because it looks almost the same. It was an American version of the kochin, and that the Darchei Tshuva seems to be very much against. But the kochin itself was here in force by the 1860s. The leghorn is a different thing. I can't answer the question about the leghorn because a leghorn was only he gets insulted whenever we talk about it. The leghorn was only discovered as a specific breed in the late 1800s, but it was probably in America probably since the early 1800s, if not even earlier than that. I wrote to the world's experts on leghorns. I talked to them on the phone a lot, but I wanted the answer in writing, so I actually sent them a letter, which is Hendrix, which is the genetics company that now controls almost all the leghorns, probably about 50 to 60% of the leghorns in the world, and asked them what they thought the origins of the leghorn was. And the guy knows me, so he goes, since the Jews were at Sinai, the leghorn's been pure. Now, that's not necessarily 100% true, but there is this idea that something like the early version of the leghorn really hasn't changed much. The leghorn that we eat has changed a tremendous amount. Well, if you eat it, the eggs. Now we eat the eggs. Right. Those chickens don't, they've changed a lot, you know, internally, but the externally, it looks more or less, not exactly, but more or less like the bird I have here, except it's white. Google it. You can take a...
The eggs.
We eat the eggs of the leghorn. Yes. If you eat a white egg, 99.9 is from a leghorn. If you eat a... Yeah, nothing wrong with leghorn. Nothing. Sorry, you had a question? I'm so sorry. Okay, we eat... As a bird, we eat what's called a broiler. I'm going to get to the broiler in a second. Yeah, the broiler that you do kaparis with. Those broilers, those are not a specific kind of chicken. That's a mixture of this guy, the guys in here, and that. You combine them all together, and you get a broiler. And I'll explain that at the end. No, the eggs, you get brown eggs from the brown chicken, you get white eggs from the leghorn, and sometimes they have other kinds of chickens that produce eggs that are different colors. If you go to the supermarket, you might find green eggs, blue eggs that come from chickens. Those are other kinds of chickens I don't have here. There was a time when we ate Cornish, but no one has eaten Cornish, at least pure Cornish. Right. But Cornish was derived from the cochin. So I'm going earlier. We're going to get to that at the end, because we want to... Okay, so far everyone's clear? So the first experiment that they had was to produce a better meat chicken, which we're going to come back to. But one of the other interesting Shilohs that was hotly debated in the 1800s... What you're looking at over here is called a feveroli. Many poskim wrote tshuvas about it. Some said mutter. Can we just take pictures at the end because the birds are already going crazy? It's not your fault because you're all the way back there, but yeah. A feveroli. The feveroli was a very, very interesting chicken because not only does it look a little bit, I mean, you could decide for yourself if it looks like a chicken, but it has a very unique taste. This bird was raised for its taste, and it was raised in northern France in the area of, you guessed it, feveroli, and its meat was very, very unique. It had meat that was very dry. I don't know why they wanted that, but if you were a good chef in France, there were certain dishes you could only make if you had a feveroli. And without a feveroli, don't even try making that French dish. The French take their food very seriously. We have to give them some leeway. But they were shilohs in a lot of the poskim, whether or not the feveroli was kosher. The reason people were nervous was because they felt the head, if you look at the shilohs and tshuvos, it looked like an owl. You can look at the head and make your own conclusions. It had five toes on its foot, and it had feathers on its foot. So people felt, maybe it's not a chicken. Many people were maturate, many people were asurate, and the chicken was very popular for a few years, and by the time the tshuvas were published, the chicken was no longer popular. So I don't know if Jews ever ate the chicken, even those that felt that it was mutter, which is significant because if you have a psak that is mutter, but it's theoretical, it's very different than if a psak that is mutter, we actually eat the bird.
What's the name of it?
Feveroli. They call it a feveroli. And in fact... I could give you a whole list, but there are a lot of poskim, a lot of chassidish poskim, a lot of the Beis Shlomo, And one of the interesting things about the feveroli is, for some reason, in the shilas and shuvas, they actually publish, some of them publish pictures. So we know it by name, and we also have pictures of what it looked like, which, I mean, this is a live one, but they have woodcuts they were able to put into the shuvas, so we can see what was going on. Okay. Any questions, concerns, or comments about the feveroli? So this is the question with the feveroli. A lot of people said mutter, a lot of people said usser, and it's never concluded because the feveroli went out of fashion and it's not used in our chicken.
So
yes, and they can produce viable offspring, although I've never done the experiment because there's nobody who's interested in shefting the feveroli, so that's what the scientists say, but I haven't done the experiment myself. Yeah. What? Okay.
So very relevant because the argument.
Hang on, just let me just put it down. Wait, just one second. He has a question. I'll come back to you. I'm really sorry. Just let me. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just want to tell you, but I'm sure it's relevant to the Paschal Marayim because the arguments.
Okay. So the reason why I like to show birds like this is so that when you learn the tshuva, you know what they were talking about. I keep these birds so that the tshuvas can be understood and you can draw what you want. But I can't tell you what the conclusion, I can tell you with the coach and what we do, because we do something. With the Favarolis, he says mutter, he says usher, but who did we paskin like? But we still have to, what do I eat? So we don't have the conclusion, because by the time everybody wrote their tshuvas, no one was eating Favarolis anymore. So you can look at what people wrote, but you can't tell me what people did. I'm sorry, yes?
From what I understand, goes from circuit to circuit.
Yeah.
No circuit ever accepted it. You can't necessarily give a circuit. So you can't really get passed down to another.
Right. So Rabbi Sender is saying a very important detail, and as a sheikhet I fully agree, is that the ones who are the guardians of the Mesorah of a species is a sheikhet. But that's only if the shaila is on a species. Meaning if a sheikhet says, I know chicken is kosher, he can give you the Mesorah on chicken, you can chef chicken. But let's say the shaila isn't if there's a Mesorah, the shaila is it a chicken? The Favaroli was developed in France. That means they combined all different kinds of chickens, collected genetic abnormalities, and produced a chicken that was unique. So they can't possibly be a sheikhet who says, in 1880, my grandfather shechted the Favaroli. It wasn't in the world.
What was the first year of the Favaroli?
The mid-1800s. So nobody could say, I have a Mesorah. The shaila is, this chicken, is it a chicken? Meaning, you're a farmer, you show me this bird, and you say it's a chicken. So there's no nemanus to this farmer. So the shaila that the Rabbanim were saying is, does this chicken qualify as a chicken, and a sheikhet who has a Mesorah for chicken can eat the Favarolis? Or is the chicken so distinct that, very good, you have a Mesorah on chicken, but can you eat the Favarolis as part of the tradition of Klal Yisrael to only eat a Ov Tahar b'Mesorah, to only eat a kosher bird if it has a Mesorah? So why are you asking me? Judge for yourself. You know chickens, and you see what I have in front of me.
My question is, what is the rule? There's a lot of ways.
Very good, very good. And that's what they discuss. And I mean, you're more than welcome to take a closer look. Right. Okay. Okay. Any questions, concerns, or comments about? Yes. That's very good. So actually,
one question.
Oh, I'm sorry. The question is, how do you know where your eggs are coming from? So, it's not so difficult, because if you're a farmer and you're selling your eggs at a normal at-market price, then your eggs are coming from a Leghorn chicken or from one of these brown chickens. Otherwise, you can't sell your eggs cheap. On the other hand, if you buy your eggs at the corner farm, you could really have a problem. And at that first presentation that I made in Lakewood, I know, I was very traumatized. First, the chicken attacking the black hat. It's funny, you know, someone had to pay for that hat. But the other thing that went wrong is that, it did go wrong. One of the things they asked me to talk about was, how to identify a kosher egg? And I thought this was the most boring topic. So at the end, I gave out some pictures. I said, this is an egg that's kosher, and if the egg looks like this, you have a shaila. And I get back to my office, I'm sitting in my office, and I see I get a lot of messages. I'm the kind of person who does not respond to phone calls, so anyone who knows me sends me an email. Nobody calls me on the phone. And it was all people in Lakewood who were saying, I'm buying eggs that look like your picture of non-kosher eggs. So I called up the farmer, and I said, what are you raising? And the guy goes, I'm raising guinea fowl. So he had somewhere in Lakewood, he had a place on the corner, whatever, and he was selling eggs, and he said fresh eggs, farm fresh eggs. He didn't say anything dishonest. He wasn't being dishonest, but the eggs that he was selling were not chicken eggs. They were guinea fowl eggs, and unless you're from a Sephardi country in North Africa, the general mesorah among the Ashkenazim, with the exclusion of the Czech Republic, was that guinea fowl, according to the, and this is written by the Chasam Sofer, are usur, and there's suffix that maybe they're actually one of the 24, the Duchifa mentioned in the Torah. To make the matters worse, guinea fowl are not chicken. So no matter what you say, if you have a Mesorah on chicken, you can't eat guinea fowl. You might have a Mesorah on guinea fowl and you can eat them, but if you don't have a Mesorah on guinea fowl, there's no way you can eat guinea fowl without having a valid Mesorah. So you're right, if you're buying chickens on the side of the road, you're on your own. But if you're buying industrial chickens, even if they don't have a certification on them, you can be pretty confident that they're from a chicken, because otherwise the guy doesn't have a viable standard. I would estimate that I have been to hundreds of these industrial productions. I spend most of my time traveling for various kashrus organizations, which I don't want to mention because they don't allow COVID presentations. And only once did I discover the guy was not selling chickens. And he tried to hide it from me. I come to do a presentation, and if you've ever been to a chicken farm, the distinguishing feature of the chicken farm is they stink. And they stink usually from miles away. Meaning I don't need directions once I'm in the area. Usually these chicken farms are in the middle of nowhere, and I just roll down my window and follow the stench. And this place stunk, okay, it stunk. But it was the wrong terrible smell, okay? So I walked in there, and, you know, he's telling me that he's only raising chickens, and I knew he was lying. I said, there's no way that you're only raising chickens, because the smell is a terrible smell, but it's not the chicken smell. So finally, he told me he was raising ducks. Okay. So he was raising all these ducks, and it was a very, like, very difficult visit. Meaning, he wasn't cooperative. I told him, I said, we're going to recall all your eggs to every one of your customers if you don't start telling me what's going on. And he had a very interesting business venture. He had found, and now it's actually become very popular, his eggs, which we certified. He had found that there was a kind of duck that laid eggs like a chicken, meaning it didn't eat a lot and produced a lot of eggs. But as he was developing the flock, he didn't have enough eggs to sell commercially. So what he was doing was he was putting duck eggs in the boxes with chicken eggs. So I said to him, how could you do that? He goes, I don't say what they are, I just say they're eggs, and my customers should be grateful because duck eggs are much better than chicken eggs, so you think you're getting a chicken egg, and lo and behold, you get a much better egg. And let me tell you, once we certified him, once we were verified that his ducks were kosher, I had some of his eggs, and if you make brownies or challah out of these eggs, it's much better than chicken eggs, so he was right. But yeah, so on the rare occasion, somebody does it, but I want to tell you something. If you know what a chicken egg is, and this is Mefersh and Shulchan Aruch, Simon Peivav, when you go to a store and you buy a non-certified box of chicken eggs, right, chicken eggs, even though a lot of them have a hechsher now, they don't really need a hechsher. If you buy without a hechsher, you're relying on the fact that you know what a chicken egg looks like. If you go and you buy an egg in the store and they say it's a chicken egg and it doesn't look like a chicken egg, you have no right to assume it's a chicken egg. But on the other hand, if you buy an egg and it looks like a chicken egg, it's a chicken egg. You know, the duck egg does not look like a chicken egg. The guinea fowl egg does not look like a chicken egg. That's why everybody called me and said, hey, our eggs don't look right, because they didn't look like chicken eggs. I just have to point out in deference that the center family accepts the guinea fowl as kosher. And I want you to know, chas v'chalil, that I am in a place to argue. I personally do not have a mesorah on the guinea fowl, but I want to recognize the center family. No, 100%. I'm not trying to chas v'chalil ignore the halachic view of the center family. But does anyone else have any questions, concerns, or comments? Okay. So,
is this the French...
Okay, so the good question is, does it have any commercial value now? And no. The people who are raising these eggs are raising it only because I want to have something that you don't have. They produce terrible, very few eggs, they don't breed well, and if you don't treat them very, very nicely, they die. To raise this guy, I had to keep him. I was doing a project with the Satmar, and they were researching all the chickens that we eat, and one of the chickens that I figured I'd get were the Feverolis, and I had 55 different kinds of chickens that I was raising, and these guys I had to raise by themselves, because the other chickens just run them over. Like, they don't kill them, they're just so weak that the other chickens basically grew much faster and trampled them, and they were just getting trampled to death. Okay. So the Rav, when he invited me to speak, asked me to speak about the Brekel. I don't know if any of you remember, but 3 years ago there was quite the exciting controversy, which I was involved in really from the beginning. Rav Vosner, Zichrono Livracha, really was uncomfortable with some, not all, but some of the commercial chickens. Now, people were asking, what chicken do we eat? The eggs I can easily show you. The chicken that we eat is not a specific breed. What happened was all these birds, well, not all these birds, but these birds were combined in different forms, and they were presented as industrial birds. Sometimes they would call it a Cornish. A Cornish is a mix of these birds. Sometimes they would be called a rock Cornish. All different kinds of mixes, but really they don't have a name. The real name is the Cobb 500, the Cobb 100. They're just the mixes, and what they do is they have populations of hundreds of thousands, and now on the industrial scale, it's a $1 billion industry. So I'm going to explain. They have populations of millions and millions of chickens, and they selectively breed them for the characteristics that are important. So you can't really give a name to the chicken that you eat in the supermarket. what it is it's a broiler, and a broiler is basically a mix of all the different chickens, primarily the chickens here. They started making the broilers that we eat probably in the early 1900s, but they only were very widely shechted in the late 70s. Until then, people did shecht Cornish. People shechted these, the barred rocks, or white rocks. And those are specific kinds of chickens. A specific kind of chicken means you go into let's say, the growing house, and all the chickens look the same. Now, the chickens are hybrids, which means that it doesn't have a name, it doesn't have to conform to anything. And really, there are two characteristics which are crucial if you want to raise chickens to eat. One is that they eat very little food, and two, that they grow very fast. So that's what's unique about our chickens, and they grow really fast, and they eat very little food. You're spending basically 2 pounds of corn for every pound of meat that you get, which if you think about it, corn, if I buy it in the supermarket, bulk, costs 15 cents a pound. So if you buy a 6 pound chicken, that was whatever 12 times 15 is, you're talking it's less than $2 to raise a chicken that you're selling for $14 in the supermarket. So the reality is that our chickens don't really have a name, but they're a mixture of these two cages, of the birds in these two cages, to some degree. Rav Vosner was very uncomfortable because some of the broilers, and I'm saying some because it's not clear which broilers he was uncomfortable, even though the people from his basement were talking to me and getting information while he was still alive. He wasn't so well at the time, but they were researching the broilers. And a lot of the broilers that were being developed were from different kinds of chickens, not just the chickens I have here. So it's not clear which broilers or Vosner was concerned about, but he was concerned that we didn't know the lineage of the birds we're eating. And just to give you a brief history is that, you know, again, nobody was taking notes on how they developed the early breeds. In the mid-1900s, there were 300 companies that were raising broilers. And they each had broilers that were somewhat unique. Now there are only two. And I've been to both these companies, I have an excellent relationship with their scientific team. And the way that they developed the broilers that won was you would go and buy the best broiler, with money, there were 300 little companies, you bought the best broilers and combined them. And then when your company was having money trouble, you sold your broilers to the next guy. And in the end, out of the 300, only two of these companies survived, but nobody knows where these broilers came from or how they bred them together. We have a pretty good idea, which is this is the basic recipe, but if something else was thrown in, we just don't know. Not involved at all. And I'll tell you why. They breed terribly. They're very fragile because of the holes in their skull, and if they are in a cage with another chicken, they're going to get killed. So now, what Rav Vosner was nervous about was the lineage, and when Rav Vosner was Nifter, there were people who decided to try to introduce a chicken that had a perfect Mesorah. And these people found a chicken that's called the Breckel. The Breckel is a very, very unique chicken. It is, at one point, it was pretty common in Belgium. It went out of style, and basically nobody has it, except these people who felt this was the ideal chicken. To the best of my knowledge, and please correct me if anyone here knows differently, but no one ever showed the Breckel to Rav Vosner. They just felt that Rav Vosner would really like this chicken. Now, the Breckel is sort of interesting because the Belgian chickens are a little bit unique in Europe. They have black feet, stuff like that. And the other thing unique about the Belgian chickens is the Belgians take their chickens very, very seriously. I guess they got nothing better to do. So they raise all sorts of chickens that are not found anywhere else in the world. And if you go from town to town in Belgium, you're going to find that there are different kinds of chickens that are rather different from each other and rather interesting.
Who said that it's not mixed with...
Hang on. Don't worry. I'm not finished yet. Then what ended up happening with the Belgians is they had a legend. Now, for those of you that are not English professors, a legend means it's a story that's probably not true. Okay? But they had a legend in Belgium that at the time of the Churban Bais, unclear which Bais, either Bais Rishon or Sheni, a group of Jewish refugees arrived in Belgium with their chickens, and their chickens are descended from these chickens that arrived straight from Eretz Yisrael. Now, for those of you that know what a globe looks like, that's quite the journey that the people took, because they went all the way around Europe and sailed into Belgium, making no stops along the way. Okay? But nonetheless, that's a legend. What we do know is archaeologically, until the Romans destroyed it, Israel was a center of chicken production. But that does not connect the dots, say that because there were chickens in Israel and there were chickens in Belgium, that the two were related. I will tell you, I found something very interesting, which people, I don't know why nobody wrote any articles about it, because I find it fascinating, is that in Egypt, there's an area called Fayum. That's where Rav Sajigon was from. And in Fayum, they have a chicken that's feral. Feral means that people raise them and then they stop caring about them and they're all over the place. And the Fayumi chicken, the regular feral chicken from Fayum, looks remarkably like some of these Belgian chickens. And genetically, they're remarkably similar. And very few people have studied it. There are theories. One theory is that the Egyptians sent a gift to Europe, to Napoleon Dafka, of the Fayum, and that's where all the Belgian breeds came from. And the other theory, depending on which side of the equator you are, feel that Napoleon, when he came to Egypt, took chickens with him, and that's the Fayumi chicken. But it's very clear that there's something bizarre about the genetics of the Belgian chickens, and that's all I can say is that it's interesting. I can't tell you that we really know what's going on. Anyways, the Brekel was once very, very popular in Europe, and then it became very unpopular. And when I say unpopular, there were 7 left in the world. And what happened was is that people said, look, it's an indigenous breed, we're going to save it. A club was formed, and they all started breeding them, and now there are a few hundred Brekel chickens. Okay. For those of you that know genetics, you know that there's what's called a genetic bottleneck. I'll tell you an interesting story. There was not the ducks I was telling you about. There was another duck that we were researching to see if it was kosher. And we purchased a pair of the ducks and wanted to make sure that we showed all the rabbanim. We don't like to ask shilas that are theoretical. So when we ask a shila if a bird is kosher, we present a male and female live, and we only present them after they've had babies that are fertile. So we had a breeding pair of these. They were called white mallards. And we presented the rabbanim. The rabbanim all said, no, shaila, it's a kosher duck, no problem. But the white mallard was relatively rare. And I had a friend who lives a few miles away from me, and I gave him the breeding pair, and he's been breeding them. And the white mallards were raised in Louisiana, for the most part, except for my group, which were raised somewhere, you know, not far from West Hempstead. And this duck had mamish no mazel. First, Hurricane Katrina came and wiped out the guy in Louisiana, and all his ducks were dead. He didn't have them anymore. And then Sandy hit the 5 towns, and my guy lost his breeding flock. But a few weeks before Sandy, nobody knew it was coming, I went to visit him, and he gave me an egg, and I was, you know, I wanted to make a presentation, so I put the egg in the incubator, and the egg hatched, and my duck survived, and I got all excited because I thought I had the last white mallard, and the OU actually made a video about it, and it was our second to most popular video that the OU made. There's an ice cream video, really cute kids, delicious ice cream, that I can't compete with. But after that, the OU video on my duck was very, very popular, and I got a phone call where somebody said, what are you talking about, it's an endangered species? I didn't mention the 5 towns in the video, but he said, I live in the 5 towns, and there's a pond near my house, and there is a white mallard there. Well, I'm not going to give details because I don't know the statutory rules, but let's just say in the end, there was a breeding pair of white mallards once again at my breeding facility, and we started raising them. I figured I'm going to save a species. That's pretty exciting. Cool. After 3 generations of breeding them, and I did it for 3 generations, so I was doing well, the eggs stopped being fertile. So I would get 20, 30 eggs, not one of them would be a viable duckling. And this is apparently very common when you line breed, which is if you keep breeding mother to child, brother to sister, eventually there's sterility in birds. So if they started with 7 Brekels and they bred them, I'm not saying guaranteed, but it's very unlikely that they're going to have a very healthy, robust population of birds. The other problem with the Brekel is that it's not best practices. If you look at the books on how to breed chickens, you're supposed to, it's called outcrossing, meaning you're supposed to take your chickens and improve it by breeding with other birds. If you are a zookeeper and you have an exotic tiger, you do not want to breed it with another kind of tiger, because species you want to keep genetically isolated. But if you're breeding chickens, you want it to look a certain way, not to be genetically unique, but to be unique in its appearance. So it's not the best practice for people to go and to start just keep their birds in isolation. Probably to improve the Brekel, they mixed it with other similar chickens that would make it look more Brekel than it did when they started. Anyways, so there were a group of people that decided that the brekka was the only was the kosher chicken that Rav Vosner would like, and they imported them into Eretz Yisrael.
What time was this story happening? It was only
seven. Mid 1900s. Okay. Correct, which is why, despite the Psak of the Avinezer, it doesn't really clarify for us a lot of species, because there are so many reasons why it might be sterile. So it can give us a yes, but it can give us a true positive, but there are a lot of false negatives. Now, the brekel was imported to Eretz Yisrael, and they were raising them in huge numbers, and what they wanted to do was market this as the ideal kosher bird. When this story broke, I just want to say that when I heard that they were going and trying to promote the brekel, Rav Vosner was very ill, but I told them, I said, if you want the OU to support you, please get a letter from Rav Vosner. Because it's very nice that you're telling me on the phone, but if we get a letter from Rav Vosner saying black and white that he wants us to do something, we're going to take that very seriously. But people from his inner circle calling isn't quite enough for us to sort of dedicate the resources that you're asking us to dedicate. We never got the letter. Anyways, after Rav Vosner was nifter, they started producing these brekels in large numbers, and they wanted to sell them as the ideal kosher chicken. And just to keep up with them, I joined the American Brekel Society. Now, you're thinking that's impressive. They did not at that time have an overabundance of members. I believe I was member number 7. Although, since I think they've changed the primary language of the society is now Yiddish because of the amount of people that joined. But that was not at the time. I got some brekels. They started raising them. And I saw the pictures that were coming of these people who were raising the brekels. I saw the pictures of the brekels that they were presenting to all the rabbanim. And they didn't look like my brekels. And I started comparing, and I went and I asked the Brekel Society. I was able to network with the Brekel. There's a robust Brekel Society in Belgium. And I asked them to send me pictures of the different kinds of brekels. And I have tons of these pictures, and none of them look like the brekels that they were raising in Eretz Yisrael. So the first thing I want to point out is that I think anybody who knows what a brekel is would not agree that what they had in Eretz Yisrael was a brekel. My sources, which I'm not sure how reliable they are, seem to indicate that the brekels they're raising in Eretz Yisrael were not pure brekels. And the judges, these are goyim, so you can, you know, they know chickens. I don't know, you know, I don't know if they knew what was going on through the controversy. By the way, the Brekel Society was following closely the Machlokes in Eretz Yisrael. They were making all sorts of jokes. They thought this was the funniest thing in the world. But the bottom line is that it seems that the Brekel they had in Eretz Yisrael was hybridized with regular chickens. And of all things, it was hybridized with a Cornish hen, which is descended from the kosher. So it seems that the brekels in Eretz Yisrael were really no better than the chickens we were eating. But the pure brekels, which I was raising, let me tell you, if you want to start a business raising these things, you're going to have to pay $500 to $600 every time you make Shabbos. Because these chickens, they don't breed well, they don't hatch well. It's not limited sterility. What happens is basically, you sort of have to like cradle them like a baby. You have to like make sure that their food is perfect, make sure they always have enough water. It's not an industrial enterprise that's going to make that at all feasible. But again, so I can't really give you a conclusion about the brekels in Israel because I don't know if those are actually brekels. The brekels that I was raising, I showed to many, many sheikhtim, and they said it's a pasha chicken. What's the big deal? But that doesn't mean that the brekels in Eretz Yisrael qualified as the same thing. And of course, there has been nobody that I'm aware of who's even thought of making an industrial production of real brekels. Okay. Does anyone have any questions, concerns, or comments about the brekels? Okay.
From the beginning,
when
they start the search, it was also
yes.
Yes. You understand? If you have a lock, right. It means that
Yes.
How do the ones in Egypt that are very similar to the Brechos, how do they breed by themselves?
Okay. So these Fayumis, by the way, I didn't believe what people were telling me about it, so I actually started raising them. They're very interesting chickens. First of all, when they get upset, they cry like a baby. I don't know if that's, like, I don't mean like a baby, like I'm saying they're baby-ish. I mean, it sounds like you're beating up on a little baby. They have a very weird cry, and they're the only chickens that I'm aware of that nest in trees. They nest on the top of palm trees. Because, you know, the palm tree is like a...
Like a royal palm?
So they have a platform, you know, because it's sort of flat, and they nest up there. Very bizarre birds, but... I don't know how they get there. I've never seen it, but I've seen the pictures. I can't build a facility that tall. But
how well did they breed? They obviously
very, very well. But they didn't start. They may have started with 20 or 30 instead of just 7. Meaning, if you have one farmer who has 7 chickens, and then 20 years later there are 500,000 of them, something had to have happened. If you have someone who gifts 30 breeding pairs, and they're released in the wild, and there are other chickens around for them to genetically diversify with, sometimes there's a genetic bottleneck and they vanish, and sometimes you have a very healthy, robust population.
Another question, why they don't simply took the Cornish?
So one of the questions that a lot of people ask is, if I had to choose what is the most reliable chicken, what is the perfect chicken, what would it be? And the truth is that I don't think that's a fair question. I think it's fair to say that a chicken is 100% kosher. And I think that there are really two birds which we can genetically trace back 150 years. And every other bird, we have to rely on what scientists tell us. But with two birds, we really can trace them back about 150 years. And that's the Leghorn and the Broiler. Now, you might not like what we put into the Broiler, but we have a pretty good idea of what we know what it is. And with the Leghorn, we have a little bit of array. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the Leghorn. Bezer Hashem, I'm going to go home and I'm going to eat an omelet, okay? But the bottom line is that the Leghorn has a little bit of array. It says that the companies don't really cooperate with us. So we go to the geneticists in the major Leghorn companies, they have so far provided information that is not accurate. Now, I'm not sure if that's a result of intention or mistake, but I found that when we try to verify what they're giving us, they've not been 100% accurate. In contrast, the Broiler companies, we have a much stronger relationship with, because the Schlachhausen are giving them money in their pocket. So they give us everything. I have sat on their computers looking through millions, I didn't go through millions, but they had millions and millions of folders of genetic records. They let me look at anything I want. We have a lot more information about the Broiler companies. So I would say really, the Leghorn and the Broiler are perfect. But if you ask me which one do we know the most about, without of questions, the Broiler. Okay? Yeah. Yes, but not necessarily the way you think. Like, imagine this guy is breeding with a chicken that's tiny. He's going to crush it. So they can breed together, but sometimes it's not feasible and it doesn't work so well. And then there, what we were saying before is a lot of chickens have recessive lethal genes. A recessive lethal gene means that for some reason, when they breed together, there's something wrong and the babies don't hatch. Correct, but nobody cared. Meaning if you had, let's say, a flock of 500 chickens, and one of your hens, all the babies, the eggs don't hatch. So you're going to eat that hen, and mishka ferlach. But now that you're trying to raise exotic chickens, this is the money in your pocket. So it's become very valuable, and it's worth it to preserve the genetic mutation. And there are all kinds of chickens that are raised, even though they don't have a good level of egg production, because they're so valuable because of other unique characteristics that are associated with the lethal gene. And I'll give you one example. You see how this chicken has a tail, this rooster has a tail? Some chickens don't have a tail. For whatever reason, that same gene that is missing the tail creates a lethal gene that 25%, not so high, of the eggs will die in the before they hatch. But it's worth it because you get extra money. You're trying to raise something unique, so you don't care if it's going to die. But if chas v'chalila, you had a commercial enterprise and 25% of your chickens were dying, that would really hurt your profitability.
Basically, you're saying you don't have Dor Yisharim for
it. Well, actually, you do have Dor Yisharim, but people are willing to take the risk.
But are they artificially inseminated today, or is
No. I want to be very clear. I don't know why people are, they've published tshuvas where they say that the birds are artificially inseminated. I've been there, okay? I've gone to the into the plants, I've gone to the places where no one's ever allowed to go, okay? Nothing's artificial. They have rooms that are 10 times the size of this room. They have hundreds of roosters, hundreds of hens, a ratio of 1 to 10 usually, and nothing is artificial. Except, I mean, hatching the eggs. So everything's artificial except the insemination, right? The incubation, they collect the eggs, they put an incubator, but the only time they artificially do it is if they're trying to test, like a Doris Sherm kind of a test. So sometimes they'll take a few of them in the lab. They all have laboratories. These are billion-dollar companies. So they have laboratories where they'll take males and females and they'll do all kinds of tests. But that's not the egg that we're using. That's just experiments they're doing. They might do that artificially. But that's, we're not eating those eggs. That's the laboratory stuff. That's not... So in my experience with chickens, they don't do it artificially. With ducks, they do. Like if you want to combine a kosher duck with the muscovite in the previous story, so that they usually do artificially, which is not as high tech as you'd think. I'm not going to describe it because it's your mama's job, you know. I'm sorry? Because there was a huge controversy a few years ago with the muscovite, and a lot of people are scared to shuck the wrong duck. But you can get kosher duck. Yeah, no, you can get kosher duck, no problem. Yes, most of the, if you go to the market to buy ducks, most of the ducks sold are muscovite, which in New York, we've had a mesorah since 1873 not to eat them. So we have a strong tradition. Rabbi Esh, who was the chief rabbi of New York before Rav Yaakov Yosef, he already had put out kol koreis. I don't know why people are shechting them. We avoid them. That's not to say that we know why he was avoiding them, but it's pretty clear that the muscovite duck was not accepted in New York. Al pi minhag.
The duck they sell in New York?
That is the most common duck they sell in the meat market in New York, is the muscovite duck, the one that we don't eat.
Oh, we don't eat that one.
Right. We eat ducks that are derived from the mallard, and the majority of ducks shechted tend to be Pekin ducks, although recently there are a number of companies who started producing with another kind of duck, which is a hybrid duck, which is Pekin and what's called a khaki Campbell.
What about the Chinese chicken?
Right, so I don't have one here, and people appreciate it, but yeah, I mean, we don't know what it is. You know, we try to, yeah.
Yeah,
we sell certified kosher duck eggs, and we make sure that they're from the kosher ducks and not the non-kosher ducks.
So what about, like, chickens from, like, Africa or anything like that?
There are probably 500 different kinds of chickens, and of course, some of them, you'll look at them and say, it's a chicken. And some of them, it's not to say that it's not a chicken, it's that, you know, who's really to make that determination? You know, my job, when I go into work, is not to say, it has, despite these differences, it's a chicken. If there's differences, you go and you go to the poskim with the live bird, and you say, here it is, and then you sit quietly and you listen to what they say. So we'll get to that. Let's finish with chicken. Okay. One of the projects which we've been working on is something rather unique. You know, when I started researching all these different kinds of chickens, my father had a question, which I'm sure for at least someone in the audience, this is a relevant question, which is very nice. I know what they had in Hungary. I know what they had in France. What do they have in Poland? My family's from Poland. What was the Polish chicken? The real Polish chicken, not the fake Polish chicken. So my father asked me this, and I felt very embarrassed because I had no idea. And it turns out that they had done a survey of resource allocations, and in the 1939, 70% of Poland was raising a very unique Polish chicken, which was known as the green-legged Polish fowl. I discovered, of course, that there was a green-legged Polish fowl club in New York. It had a grand total of one member, so they were teetering on the brink, and he was more than happy to talk to anybody about chickens, and he sold me a bunch of chickens, and I've selectively bred them, and I've reproduced, I think, artificially, meaning it's not that it's a pure Polish, but it looks like a pure Polish, what the typical chicken was in Poland. And hang on, I'll pull it out.
Now, if you look, if you look at it, it looks sort of like the Leghorn. It definitely has Leghorn ancestry. The eggs are not Leghorn, they're brown. But also, it has a very unique characteristic, which is the legs are green. And depending on how much corn I give it and how much sunlight it gets, the legs get more or less green. And of all the breeds, this chicken is called the green leg Polish fowl.
Because this chicken actually has green legs. And again, it's a little bit sun-deprived, so it's not as green as it could get. But if you look closely, you'll see it's green, and it gets more and more green depending on what I feed it.
And again, first of all, the way we developed this chicken...
The way we developed this chicken was not, it's not pure, but it looks the way it's supposed to look. And that's the idea, is that it's very, chickens are all really, if it's a chicken, it's a chicken. So chickens are generally the same, but if you know what you're doing or you get the right expert to help you, you can make chickens look easily the way you want them to look just by selectively breeding. And the way we did this is we got 12 eggs, 4 hatched, which is not limited, that is not a problem of sterility. That's a problem for something else, which is called driving in a car with chickens rolling around, you know, with eggs rolling around in a cardboard box, despite how much styrofoam you put in. But from those babies, we raise them, and we raise about 100, 150 a year. We cull, we get rid of all the ones that we don't like, and we keep the best ones, and after a while, you have something that looks the way it's supposed to look. Incidentally, I might be the only person in America who has a chicken that looks like this, which sounds very impressive, but if anyone else wanted to, they could, what?
I have one.
Did you get it from me? So it probably wasn't like, it probably, did it have a green leg? Did have green legs. Green legs is the key. Green legs, that's the part that's special. Oh, yeah, yeah, it looks like a chicken, but it has green legs. Look, it's not, I'm not holding a monkey in my hand. I'm holding a chicken. It's a good question. I think it's, you know, relative.
When you say you have all these questions that you're breeding them, it's like, where is it?
We don't tell people. Sorry.
Okay. It's not in your house.
No, not in my house. Not in my house. I have zero chickens in my house. And I constantly have to tell the town that we don't keep any chickens in the house. Sometimes he thinks he's a rooster. He's wrong, but there's no chickens, no ducks, no geese in my house. Okay, that's true. There are none. Okay.
What do you say you can get some?
Huh?
Well, I say you're the only one that has one.
Right, so I could say that I'm all special because I'm the only one who has this, but if there was money involved, I can assure you in 3 years there'd be many other people who had a chicken that looked exactly like this. Green legs included, not just this part, but the green legs. Okay? Hang on.
Yeah, it's a very healthy, nice chicken.
How does it taste?
So taste is relative. I can't describe a taste. It also depends how you feed it. I think we have to do... So here's the question. Is there a Shiloh? That's the question. It looks like a regular chicken or not. And I have a problem, which is I have not found any old shechtim who shechted the common chickens that were raised in Poland. And I've gone to a lot of shechtim. I found shechtim who worked on the German-Polish border. But I'm looking for shechtim from Lodz, Grodno, those kinds of places. And I haven't found any. So the question is, did the Jews eat? Right, very few. It's a catastrophe. So on the one hand, I know for a fact that this chicken breeds 100% normally with regular chickens. So for myself, who passes like Avni Nezer, I have no problem eating a chicken like that. But someone who would go like the Divrei Chaim, or somebody who would go like, you know, that you need a Masorah that looks like a regular chicken, it does have a shinoi, it has a green leg, and would that be an issue for people who paskin in accordance with the Divrei Chaim? Okay. Right. It doesn't have an abundance of meat, but it has a significant. It's not like a. Right. It's a.
When you say you taste these chickens, are you shucking them yourself and eating them?
Yeah. Okay. So now, just before we. I think my time's up. I just want to very quickly just talk about turkey. Turkey for just a minute. First of all, as you probably are aware, that we don't really have a strong Masorah for the kashrus of turkey. If you think about it, turkey was discovered in America in 1492. And even if the first thing they did was bring the turkey back, Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to paskin, and there's clearly nobody from the time of the Gemara who had a Masorah that turkey was kosher. What's interesting is we have one tshuva from that time period that claims that people claim was written. We don't have the tshuva in existence, but they say the Rashash was paskind that the turkey was kosher. The problem is that the Rishash was nifter about 90 years before Columbus got to America. So even if the first thing Columbus did was run to the Rishash, he was too late, and he was probably, whatever the Rishash was talking about, we don't have the tshuva, so we can't really talk about it, but whatever the Rishash was talking about, he probably was not talking about a turkey. So I guess the question is, how is it that turkey is kosher? So first, I have to quote the Nativ, Meshiv Davar Chaf Beis. You should look it up if you're doubtful of what he said. He said, listen, if you had asked me originally about a turkey, I'd be hesitant to permit it. But now that all of Klal Yisrael is eating it for generations, how can we say there's a problem unless we have evidence that it's a shaila? And I think, quite frankly, it's not as unsatisfactory as that answer is. I think that's really the true answer, which is everybody's eating it, so it's too late to ask questions. But there's another answer which some people have suggested, which is based on the Kresu Plesi. In the end of his commentary on Simon Pei Beis, he has they usually publish, it's a 9-page essay called Kuntres Pnei Nesher. And he suggests that until the time of the Ramah, people paskind not in accordance to the Ramah, but they paskind like the Rambi, Rav Moshe Bar Yosef. We have a tradition, this is from the Gemara, that Shachin V'Nidme, we generally accept as kosher, which is if two birds flock together and they look the same, we assume they are the same. And the psak was, what does it mean, nidme? And that's what I've been talking about the whole day, is what's nidme? Does this look like a chicken? Does this look like a chicken? What's considered to be nidme? So we have no clear guidance on that, which is why there are all these machleksim as to what a chicken is. But the Rambi has very, very clear directives, which is nidme b'simonim, that the simoni kashrus, the four kosher signs, it looks the same. And although a turkey does not look like a chicken, it's korkabon, looks like a chicken. The zefek looks like a chicken, and its feet look like a chicken. So it was nidme b'simonim to the chicken, and perhaps it was accepted as kosher because until the Ramah was a little bit more machmir, people accepted birds to be of the same misora if they looked the same with their internal simoni kashrus. Yeah.
If we're having a problem, we're saying it's totally different species, like a turkey, it looks like a chicken, it's okay. Why do we have problems?
So the Rambi would, right, so the same, if you would paskin like that, none of these would be a problem. But the Ramah was more machmir, and people subsequently became more machmir to make it be not only nidme b'simonim, but it has to look all around like a chicken.
And what does it mean that the Mishnah
Berurah? If I knew that, we'd have no machlokes, right?
I'm saying, but this one's bigger, that one's smaller. But what are you calling? Look, they'll flock together. They all live together.
I think what he's saying is that birds take feathers off and your kosher can be based on smaller chickens.
I would agree with you, but you're saying to me, if you paskin like the Rambi by turkey, why don't we paskin like the Rambi by chicken?
And basing the
right. So hang on. So let me explain. The chicken was in Europe in the 1540s. We know this from the writings of the Bach. So there was turkey. I'm sorry. The turkey was in Europe in the 1540s already because it was very popular, very profitable. Everyone was raising them. So, again, that was before the Ramah was well published, right? His Sfarim weren't around until 30, 40 years later. So now, they passed it like the Rambi in the 1500s. That was the accepted psak. Later on, when the chickens started arriving, the Mishnah chickens, that was the 1800s. That was 200 to 300 years later. So the Derech HaPsak had changed by that point. So they were passing the turkey based on a psak that was no longer the accepted psak because the Ramah did not passkin like the Rambi. And since the Ramah didn't passkin like him, subsequent paskim also weren't going to passkin.
But then you have different kinds of turkey also.
Okay. No, turkeys are not as differentiated as the chickens. I did not bring in exotic turkeys.
You have wild turkeys.
So we accept wild turkeys as kosher, we accept farm turkeys as kosher, and they're not so different. Take a look. The wild turkey is much more, you know, able to survive in the wild. I mean, I've heard from farmers that domestic turkeys, when it rains, they go outside and they drown, which is amazing because they just have to put their head down. They, you know, whatever. They're whatever you want to say. But the bottom line is that turkeys are not so unique. This chicken, I think it's a chicken, but you could argue it doesn't really look like a chicken. You could argue this doesn't look like a chicken, you could argue that doesn't look like a chicken, if you want to. Okay, we could argue it. Right.
That's what I'm saying. So what is your characteristic?
Right, so that's the problem, is if I knew the answer, then we would say either all chickens are kosher or only one or two chickens is kosher, but I can't answer your question. But turkeys, we accept all species of turkey.
From every continent?
No. There's a turkey in Australia which is completely different genetically. It is not at all genetically related to our turkey, it's just called a turkey.
That turkey did not come from America, then?
Nothing to do with the Americans.
So
it's a
we're using this, why don't we say something like an ostrich is kosher? Ostriches are in Australia.
No. We don't accept the turkey in Australia. We don't.
No, I'm saying, but why don't we say all Australian animals would be kosher?
Oh, okay.
Because we're going to say that we have the
right.
Simonim that they definitely
work. Right, so first of all, the ostrich does not have all the Simonim kashrus. Second of all, many people have the opinion that the ostrich is the basayana, which is specifically mentioned in the Torah's usher. But you want to say ostriches were in Israel at the time.
What, like a kiwi,
right. So maybe you could argue, or a penguin. Yeah. So maybe you're going to say that they can't possibly be on the 24, but the minhag of Klal Yisrael is to work the other way. Is not to say by default if it's illogical for it to be the 24, but the other way.
Basically, the logic behind the turkey. It looks like a chicken. It's not one of the 24.
But none of the birds you're mentioning look like a chicken. If you cut open the ostrich, if you cut up the penguin, if you cut open those birds, you'll see that internally they don't have the simanim like a chicken. So the turkey is an anomaly, because even though it's clearly not a chicken, it has the same simanim kashrus of a chicken. If you cut open a penguin, it doesn't have a korkabun that looks like a chicken. If you cut open an ostrich, well, you don't need to cut it open. You look at its feet, it doesn't have the simanim kashrus of a chicken. So the heter of the Rambi really applies to practically no birds except the turkey. The turkey was lucky. It happens to have the simanim kashrus that looks like a chicken. But you're not, go to the Bronx Zoo and check. You're not going to find any other birds that if you open them, you have the same simanim kashrus. And if you do, then we have what to talk about. I mean, I haven't opened every bird. I'm trying, but you know. For the turkey, it seems that I'm not.
The right time.
Look, we're talking like the Nesif. Your grandfather ate it, your father ate it. Unless you're from the Tamidim of the Shlo, you know, your family eats turkey. So what's the problem? But that's the Nesif. That makes the most sense. But I'm giving another suggestion. Perhaps it was based on the Rambi. A third suggestion, which I don't think is going to be as popular, is that really the pesach was that peacock was kosher. And peacock was accepted as kosher. This is a Gemara. The Gemara, it's the same Gemara as twice. Right, you could find, so is a chicken. You could find the Gemara in Chulin and in Shabbos. It talks about people were hunting and eating peacocks, tavis. Rashi translates tavis as pavon, and pavon in French is peacock. So there's no shiloh that tavis was kosher. And maybe the original shiloh was about the peacock. We don't accept peacock now because we don't have a mesorah for it. But you could even find from the 1800s shilohs and shuvos, which is clear people were eating it. But a mesorah, as I said earlier, is only if you have a distinct line, not just, you know, evidence, historical evidence. But anyways, so maybe the shiloh wasn't a peacock. The peacock was accepted as kosher, and the peacock looks very similar to a turkey, and because as you said, they're both pheasants, or part of the Gallo family. Right.
They go hunting all the time?
Right. So that's the question. Well, guinea fowl's not the same family, but there are other pheasants that are in the same family, and some people should say they're all...
Right.
So that's the same question, and it's the same answer. But the problem is that was a long time ago, so maybe when they originally asked about the turkey, they thought, okay, it's like the peacock. It looks the same, it's the same kind of bird. Or, alternatively, that the Spanish were the ones who brought in the peacock. I'm sorry, the turkey. So when the Spanish brought in the turkey, they brought it first to Sephardi countries, where they passed like the Rambam and the Mechaber. They were lenient up to the Sephardi customs, and they said, we have a Mesorah, and the Ashkenazim made it according to them. Could be. Okay. Anyways, I don't know if anyone has questions, but I think I'm out of time. I want to thank you all for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm going to step back. Sparta and Mesorah on turkey.
What?
Sparta and Mesorah
on turkey?
What?
You know,
just want to make sure you don't get the picture.
You know what? There's another statement published at the same time, but called Arugas Abosim, but that's the one who says it, but not the Arugas Abosim.
No, it's probably
it's called, it's a wild kind of a bird.
Is it okay? It's just not nice to call someone a ducky fox.
Maybe, but that's because it's not supposed to do it.
So broccoli explained it. So you think broccoli?
So what about the fiume though?
No masoya, not interesting at all. But what?
No, what he said.
What about the fiume chicken?
Not a broccoli.
It's not a broccoli, so it's not. But why they are saying it's not a chicken? Any ground? Same life from the fox. But it's smacked them. I think it's some.
I can't tell you anything.
But you think that the broccoli could have any hit there?
No. I think these are much more, but not this one, because this one's weird. But, you know, because this one's mixed. But this one, much more hungry. We've been eating this chicken for 15-16 years. And the broilers, we've been eating those kinds of chickens for 100 years. So you want to tell me that my grandfather was my ready?
So you're saying the bar drops are not as good as the
this is not a time when I can go and get, you know, quality bar drop. This is not a...
So if you would have a quality bar drop,
It's not the China chicken.
there?
Is it with Russia?
It's Fizia grill.
Yeah.
Fizia grill.
We don't die, we don't die, we don't die.
What?
We don't die, we don't die. 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 We don't die, we don't die.